We do nothing. We don't know that they mean us harm.
And will you still counsel waiting when they come in the night and they kill you? Or they take you away?
Her expression was disdainful and amused. It was all in the lips and the eyebrows and the set of the nose.
If they try such a thing, they will find me hard to catch and harder still to kill.
A squat young man sitting on the bench behind her harrumphed for attention, then said with a booming voice,
All father, my people are comfortable. We make the best of what we have. If this war of yours goes against us, we could lose everything.
You have already lost everything. I am offering you the chance to take something back.
The fire blazed high as he spoke, illuminating the faces of the audience.
I don't really believe,
Shadow thought.
I don't believe any of this. Maybe I'm still 15. Mom's still alive and I haven't even met Lori yet. Everything that's happened so far has been some kind of especially vivid dream.
And yet he could not believe that either. All we have to believe with is our senses, the tools we use to perceive the world, our sight, our touch, our memory. If they lie to us, then nothing can be trusted. And even if we do not believe, then still we cannot travel in any other way than the road our senses show us, and we must walk that road to the end. Then the fire burned out, and there was darkness in Velaskjalf, Odin's hall.
Now what?
Now we go back to the carousel room. And old One-Eye buys us all dinner, greases some palms, kisses some babies, and no one says the G-word anymore.
G-word?
Gods, what were you doing the day they handed our brains, boy, anyway?
Someone was telling a story about stealing a tiger's balls. I had to stop and find out how it ended.
Mr. Nancy chuckled.
But nothing was resolved. Nobody agreed to anything.
He's working them slowly. He'll land them one at a time. You see, they'll come around in the end.
Shadow could feel that a wind was coming up from somewhere, stirring his hair, touching his face, pulling at him. They were standing in the room of the biggest carousel in the world, listening to the Emperor waltz. There was a group of people, tourists by the look of them, talking with Wednesday over at the other side of the room, by the wall covered with all the wooden carousel horses. As many people as there had been shadowy figures in Wednesday's hall.
Through here,
boomed Wednesday, and he led them through the only exit, formed to look like the gaping mouth of a huge monster, its sharp teeth ready to rend them all to slivers. He moved among them like a politician, cajoling, encouraging, smiling, gently disagreeing, pacifying.
Did that happen?
Did what happen, shit for brains?
The hall. The fire. Tiger balls riding the carousel.
Heck, nobody's allowed to ride the carousel. Didn't you see the signs? Now hush.
The monster's mouth led to the organ room, which puzzled Shadow. Hadn't they already come through that way? It was no less strange the second time. Wednesday led them all up some stairs, past life-size models of the four horsemen of the apocalypse hanging from the ceiling, and they followed the signs to an early exit. Shadow and Nancy brought up the rear. And then they were out of the house on the rock, walking past the gift store and heading back into the parking lot.
Pity we had to leave before the end. I was kind of hoping to see the biggest artificial orchestra in the whole world.
I've seen it,
said Chernabog.
It's not so much.
The restaurant was a big and barn-like structure 10 minutes up the road. Wednesday had told each of his guests that tonight's dinner was on him and had organized rides to the restaurant for any of them that didn't have their own transportation. Shadow wondered how they had gotten to the house on the rock without their own transportation and how they were going to get away again, but he said nothing. It seemed the smartest thing to say. Shadow had a car full of Wednesday's guests to ferry to the restaurant. The woman in the red sari sat in the front seat beside him. There were two men in the back seat, a peculiar-looking young man whose name Shadow had not properly caught, but thought might be Elvis, and another man in a dark suit whose Shadow could not remember. He had stood beside the man as he got into the car, had opened and closed the door for him, and was unable to remember anything about him. He turned around in the driver's seat and looked at him, carefully noting his face, his hair, his clothes, making certain he would know him if he met him again, and turned back to start the car to find that the man had slipped from his mind. An impression of wealth was left behind, but nothing more.
I'm tired,
thought Shadow. He glanced to his right and snuck a glance at the Indian woman. He noted the tiny silver necklace of skulls that circled her neck, her charm bracelet of heads and hands that jangled like tiny bells when she moved. There was a dark blue jewel on her forehead. She smelled of spices, of cardamom and nutmeg and flowers. Her hair was pepper and salt, and she smiled when she saw him look at her.
You call me Mama G.
I am Shadow, Mama G.
And what do you think of your employer's plans, Mr. Shadow?
He slowed as a large black truck sped past, overtaking them with a spray of slush.
I don't ask, he don't tell,
he said.
If you ask me, he wants a last stand. He wants us to go out in a blaze of glory. That's what he wants. And we are old enough or stupid enough that maybe some of us will say yes.
It's not my job to ask questions, Mama G,
said Shadow, the inside of the car filled with her tinkling laughter. The man in the back seat, not the peculiar-looking young man, the other one, said something, and Shadow replied to him, but a moment later he was damned if he could remember what had been said. The peculiar-looking young man had said nothing, but now he started to hum to himself, a deep, melodic bass humming that made the interior of the car vibrate and rattle and buzz. The peculiar-looking man was of average height, but of an odd shape. Shadow had heard of men who were barrel-chested before, but had no image to accompany the metaphor. This man was barrel-chested, and he had legs like, yes, like tree trunks, and hands like, exactly, ham hocks. He wore a black parka with a hood, several sweaters, thick dungarees, and, incongruously, in the winter and with those clothes, a pair of white tennis shoes, which were the same size and shape as shoeboxes. His fingers resembled sausages with flat, squared-off fingertips.
That's some hum you got,
said Shadow from the driver's seat.
Sorry,
said the peculiar young man in a deep, deep voice, embarrassed. He stopped humming.
No, I enjoyed it. Don't stop.
The peculiar young man hesitated, then commenced to hum once more, his voice as deep and reverberant as before. This time there were words interspersed in the humming.
Down, down, down,
he sang so deeply that the windows rattled.
Down, 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 down.
Christmas lights were draped across the eaves of every house and building that they drove past. They ranged from discreet golden lights that dripped twinkles to giant displays of snowmen and teddy bears and multicolored stars. Shadow pulled up at the restaurant, and he let his passengers off by the front door, then he got back into the car. He would park it at the back of the parking lot. He wanted to make the short walk back to the restaurant on his own in the cold to clear his head. He parked the car beside a black truck. He wondered if it was the same one that had sped past him earlier. He closed the car door and stood there in the parking lot, his breath steaming. Inside the restaurant, Shadow could imagine Wednesday already sitting all his guests down around a big table, working the room. Shadow wondered whether he had really had Callie in the front of his car, wondered what he had been driving in the back.
Hey, bud, you got a match?
Said a voice that was half familiar, and Shadow turned to apologize and say no, he didn't have a match, but the gun barrel hit him over the left eye, and he started to fall. He put out an arm to steady himself as he went down. Someone pushed something soft into his mouth to stop him crying out and taped it into position. Easy, practiced moves like a butcher gutting a chicken. Shadow tried to shout, to warn Wednesday, to warn them all, but nothing came out of his mouth but a muffled noise.
The quarry are all inside,
said the half-familiar voice.
Everyone in position?
The crackle of a voice, half audible through a radio.
Let's move in and round them all up.
What about the big guy?
Said another voice.
Package him up. Take him out,
said the first voice. They put a bag-like hood over Shadow's head and bound his wrists and ankles with tape and put him in the back of a truck and drove him away. There were no windows in the tiny room in which they had locked Shadow. There was a plastic chair, a lightweight folding table, and a bucket with a cover on it, which served Shadow as a makeshift toilet. There was also a 6-foot-long strip of yellow foam on the floor, and a thin blanket with a long-since-crusted brown stain in the center. Blood or shit or food, Shadow didn't know and didn't care to investigate. There was a naked bowl behind a metal grill high in the room, but no light switch that Shadow had been able to find. The light was always on. There was no door handle on his side of the door.